Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Beer Ladies podcast with your hosts, Lisa, Katie, Christina, and myself, Tandy. You can find us at our website or all over social media. Our website is beerladiespodcast.com, and our social media, Twitter, Instagram, Mastodon, Blue Sky, TikTok, and even Facebook are at Beer Ladies Pod or Beer Ladies Podcast. If you'd like to support the show, you can find our merch store link on any of our social media bios or in the show notes for this episode. And if you'd like to sponsor an episode, do mail us at beerladiespodcast@gmail.com. Now back to the beer.
Hello and welcome back to the Beer Ladies podcast. I'm Lisa and I am your host this evening, this afternoon, this morning, whenever we're getting into your ears. And I am joined today by my two co-hosts, Katie and Christina. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
So we are excited because we are bringing you some more history knowledge. We know that while we were on our holiday break, a lot of you were saying, we want more history episodes. We want more history episodes. And so we are here to oblige. But before we get into today's topic, which is going to be, we'll say medieval plus, and then we'll get into what it is properly in a minute, we're going to start with our regular, what are you drinking? So actually, Christina, I'm going to start with you because I know you're not on the booze tonight, but you do have something that looks very pretty as we record.
Yes, I have my skull or my skeleton teacup, which I'm obsessed with, which is great on this very cold and windy day.
Hear, hear. Nothing wrong with a good cup of tea. We are always here for it. So, Katie, what do you have?
And I will just like link in, do a little segue into the cold IPA.
Cold.
Because it's not actually that cold. It's just miserable.
No, yeah, it's just
it's
windy.
The sideways rain that gets to you. People were saying, oh, I can't wait for it to warm up. And I'm like, I prefer it to be 0 degrees than sideways rain. I'm sorry. Anyway, I am drinking a Rascal cold IPA. And it is part of their Outbreak. I'll get there eventually. Outbreak series. And I would really love this to join their core range because
yes,
I really like it. It's a lovely IPA and it's become one of my go-to IPAs when I'm in the off license and I've had it on tap in the Rascal. And it's lovely.
It is lovely. I really enjoyed that one. And the Galway Bay cold IPA is also really lovely. So as much as I can sometimes be a curmudgeon for new, and I'm air quoting, IPA, it's actually that I'm totally here for. So more cold IPA. Wonderful. And I'm sort of in between. I'm neither on nor off the booze as such. I have the Lucky Saint, which is a non-alcoholic lager. So I'm actually giving this a shot for the first time this evening. Mostly because it's a school night and, you know, there's a lot going on this week. But I have to say that the nice folks who distributed here in Ireland sent us some, so I will be giving it out to the other beer ladies as well to give it a shot to give that a little, you know, kind of the old college try. But I think Lucky Saint, I decided it was still on brand too because we, drumroll, are going to be talking about Monastic Brewing. Ooh, and mostly on the ladies. So we're gonna have to mention the men a little bit because they're around, but this is, you know, one of those topics where I know enough to be dangerous. Katie, I think you've got some interesting research on what's going on today, but this is really one where we're gonna kind of lead on Christina, but some other parts of this where I have my own, I'll say, specialty areas of interest. And we're going to get into that. But before we get into all the nuns, you know, because we only hear about these cool nuns. These are not like, you know, these are not like the nuns that scared me at school. These are different. So Before we get into that, though, I would love Christina to give us a little bit of a recap of what she has been up to lately. She's been going off to do some fun brewing and getting ready for some book stuff. So quick recap on that before we dive in.
So I'm wearing a Closet Brewing Project hoodie, which I am obsessed, well, sweatshirt, which I'm obsessed with. So I was in Edinburgh the 12th through the 14th of January. And we were brewing a collaboration brew that we're going to be serving at one of the launches for The Devils and the Draft Lines, which is my book with Camera Books on the history of women in brewing in the UK, which is available for pre-order now.
So
we were basing it off of sort of these old recipes that women wrote to each other or were in their own recipe books or just women's recipes that we found. So one of them that I found when I was looking through all this is a Scotch ale by Lady Holmby. And so we looked at the brewing process and Lucy and Lizzie looked at that and we just got inspired by that. So it's sort of historical-ish, I should say, because we chose sort of our herbal additions, not necessarily because this is exactly what they would put in the beer, but because they sort of were inspired by different phases of Scottish history. So, for example, there was a Bronze Age burial in North Mains, and it was a woman interred with an ale or with a grain-based, probably alcoholic beverage that was herbed with meadowsweet. So we said, okay, we're going to put meadowsweet in there. Now, there's the famous folkloric story of the Picts brewing with heather. So we said, okay, we're going to put heather in there. And then, of course, you know, there's other brewing herbs. And so we decided to include yarrow as well to get that really nice, tasty background. And so we decided to brew with these. And we had a lot of fun making all these hot teas and things. Or not hot teas, these herbal teas to kind of figure out what combination was going to taste best and what we really liked. And so that was a lot of fun. But I think what we really enjoyed was looking through all of the things that women in the book that I wrote sort of got in trouble for doing and had their licenses to brew or their licenses to run an ale house potentially restricted. So gossiping, lying, these sorts of things. And we tried to do every single one on the list. So playing unseasonal music, we decided to play Monster Mash at like 10 in the morning, you know, like these kinds of things. And I'm going to be writing a blog post up about it. And of course, but it will be lots of fun. Please, if you're in the Edinburgh area, I will post more details, but it should be, you know, March 15th, 16th, please come down to the launch and you will be able to sample the brew. So that was a lot of fun. And before we get into the nun stuff, I do want Lisa to talk about what she has been up to with her new project.
So I've
before
sort of...
Before we do that,
Katie,
describe your hoodie.
Oh, that's
Christine.
A great
shot.
This is so
it
extra.
Is
we love it.
Absolutely amazing. So there is a big rainbow on it. And then in kind of like pink fluffy cloud letters, it says Closet Brewing, and there's like a wilderness scene with little people in it. And
we're gonna
says,
have to make sure this is on our Instas. It is amazing.
Have to take a picture. Good beer with good people. I absolutely love it. I think it is fabulous, and I just don't want you to skip over it. Just say,
absolutely.
Oh, I'm wearing a Closet Brewing hoodie. It's an amazing
hoodie.
It really
is. It's my favorite. I think I think it's my favorite piece of beer merch. I saw Lucy wearing it and I was like, where can I buy that? I need that in my life. I'm obsessed.
So now we'll go to Lisa and we'll just make my imposter syndrome massive.
Nonsense.
Overachievers, you know?
Well, mine isn't even that exciting. I didn't do much new exactly. I've just spun out, if you like, all of my Weirdo Guide to Dublin Pubs blog posts into their own little online home. So for those who don't know, I try to go to a new pub each week. It doesn't always happen because life, but the goal is to try to have at least, you know, one new pub a week. I go and I take pictures, I write it up, I make sure that we can say whether or not this is one that's kid friendly or not, or do they have food or do they have traditional music? You know, what are the things that make this pub unique and why you might want to go? The good news is I'm never going to run out. So if you can just, you can just, you know, point your browsers to weirdodublinpubs.com. That will take you there. So I've just moved them all over from one of my other websites and they're now standalone. And I'm trying to even do the TikToking for them, even though I'm very bad at TikTok, but there's an Instagram for it as well. It's on Threads. It's somewhere on Blue Sky. I'm at least sort of cross-promoting it over there as well. But the nice thing is, you know, try to do the pub a week, try to say whether or not they have craft beer. And of course, possibly most importantly, is there any story or any folklore that the pub might be haunted? This is also something we want to capture and promote, if so, because you know, our regular listeners know we are never not on our spooky stuff if we can avoid it. So, you know, got to get that in there. So, yeah, and if there's a pub anyone really wants me to get to, let me know, because I admit my North Side bias. I don't like to cross the river if I don't have to, but I do know that the ones that will really drive traffic are all on, you know, the other side of the river. We'll get there. We'll get there. But folks, we've got a lot of good stuff on this side, you know? So
yeah,
I have a bias.
North
but
side,
yes,
best side.
More to come. Exactly. North side, best side. So that's out there too. So yeah, that's my little project. I try to, again, do it weekly. It doesn't always happen because sometimes, you know, or there's weather. I have to say, I did do one very close to me. I haven't written it up yet as of this. It'll be out by the time this drops. But, you know, because of the enormous storm, I was like, I'm going to go to a pub that's really close because I can't be out in this. So sometimes, you know, laziness does win out. But we are not here to talk about lazy people today. Oh, no. Oh, no. We are talking about monastic brewing and all sorts of cool stuff related to it. But I think we also want to sort of, you know, grounded in why we're talking about this right now specifically, because here in Ireland, folks, we have a new bank holiday and we are very, very excited about it. So I think, Christina, before I go to you, Katie, maybe you want to set the scene for people who might not know about our bank holiday for St. Bridget.
This is our second year, is it? It is our second year of the bank holiday. So it is.
I think so. It's still new, though. It's still new. We're getting used to it.
Our most famous saint, will I say that?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so Saint Bridget, she is, you know, go the ladies. She is, and we have done a whole episode on Saint Bridget before, where I've spoke about what we learned in school about Saint Bridget, which may or may not have been true, because she may or may not have been a real person, or
yeah, these things happen.
Or an amalgamation of lots of different types of people. But yeah, it's a very special day, and it's great to see a female saint get the recognition. It's like St. Patrick has had his time, you know?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
What do you do then? Oh, everyone goes out, gets hammered, you know? We're going to St. Bridget is cooler. It's like, it's in February. You're coming out of dry January. She's the patron saint of brewers, isn't she?
Exactly. So there's a direct connection. It's not like with St. Patrick, like you say, where it's just kind of an excuse to be out on the booze. So, you know, she's telling you.
St. Patrick wasn't even Irish.
Exactly. Yeah, he just, you know, rocked up. He's like us. He just turned up on a boat and was like, here I am. So granted, maybe not by choice in his case, but hey, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes people tell
not
stories.
Not really by choice. But, you know, Ireland welcomes the people from both.
here we go yes, we'd like to think so. But so we're focusing on Bridget, as you say, Katie. We have an entire episode in our archives, folks, go back and, you know, listen to that. But, you know, again, I think it's really important that, you know, whether or not she was a real person or, like you say, an amalgamation of many people, or, you know, at different times different versions of that, women were doing all kinds of brewing, as we know from Christina's books coming out. But when we get into this, you know, sort of specifically monastic brewing, Christina, tell us a little bit about what does Bridget represent here, and what are we talking about when we start to get into some of the actual people involved?
Right. So alongside stories of Bridget, we have many sort of legends about her and brewing.
Oh, yeah.
So famously, I think the one that is often most often written about is the bathwater story, which has been sort of diluted to this idea that she turned her own bathwater into beer, which is not exactly how the story goes. It's more that she saw a group of sick people and they had water prepared separately for bathing for them, and she turned that into ale after they asked her to provide that for them. So it wasn't that she was in her bathtub and was like, you know what, I would like a pint. A little more complicated than that. But I think one of perhaps the other most famous story is the story of she has, you know, founded the monastic community in Kildare, and it's new there, and she has, you know, her nuns, and she gets the idea at the last minute around Easter that she is going to brew ale to supply all the churches around her. Now, this is a new concept for this particular location, of course, because they're new. But she doesn't have enough malt and she doesn't have enough equipment to do this. So the nuns around her are panicking. But what that tells us is all of those nuns know how to brew because they know that she doesn't have the right stuff to do it. Now, this story is fictional, probably. I don't want to offend everybody, but, you know, most likely fictional. But the writer who wrote it is perhaps talking about and speaking about nuns that he would have been familiar with in his own time, because it was written 150 years after she supposedly lived. So he's talking about and writing about these women with the knowledge of what nuns would have had around him. And so again, it's not surprising that she brewed just the time that she brewed and this was new. And again, the nuns knew that she didn't have the right stuff to do it. Right. And that very clearly tells us that they were familiar with brewing. And so we have this amazing book, which I can really highly recommend if you're interested in nuns or female monasticism at all. So this is by Tracy Collins. And let me see if I can get it to not blur.
And this is there like quite a tome you're holding up. Like this is a proper solid kind of book.
So this is Female Monasticism in Medieval Ireland and Archaeology, and it's by Tracy Collins. And this is an amazing book. I have looked through it and analyzed what she's looked through basically in my study. So, of course, I have a book on Irish brewing history that's coming out next year around this time. So this was a really amazing source for my book. And I really, again, do highly recommend this book. And through, you know, Tracy Collins's book and her and the research and the things that she's analyzed, it's clear that nuns were brewing by the archaeological evidence. She has evidence much later into the medieval period, later medieval. There's clear cut data that shows that nuns were brewing in these monastic communities, which I think is just really fascinating because, you know, we forget that nuns were brewing as well alongside monks. And because there's quite a bit to be done about monks and brewing. We talk about that quite a bit in sort of beer history. That's kind of the quintessential monk with the pint or the tankard is a common motif, I think, even in craft beer now. But we forget, but nuns were brewing right alongside them. And I think books like Collins's here really help reignite that idea and find that really hard evidence there. But of course, you can go to the National Museum of Ireland in Archaeology, and they have an amazing exhibition on Glendalough, and you can see the barley malt, the really old barley malt from the medieval period that's there, which is really, really cool. And then, of course, we have kilns found in monastic communities. There's all kinds of evidence to support monastic brewing, and particularly in this book, nuns brewing. So beware, I'll be talking more about that in my book that comes out next year. But if you want stuff now, seriously, get this book. It is amazing. It is such a great resource. So alongside that, my book that's coming out in March, yay!
March!
The Devil's in the Draft Lines. I talk about religious brewing traditions, Jewish brewing traditions, as well as medieval Christian Catholic brewing traditions. And of course, we have brewing nuns there. One of the stories I talk about is a particular priory where the prioress and her nuns had a bit of a falling out. That's a bit of an understatement. Several of the nuns had left in apostasy, and it was drama to the point where they had to bring the case to a higher person to kind of figure out what was going to happen. And on pain of cursing, which is excommunication, they had a list of things that they had to do. And one of them was to hire a woman, a lay woman, to brew beer for them, brew ale in this case for them. And she had to be of good reputation. So that is another thing that I do want to stress. And this is the same with monastic communities. Just because there was brewing on the place doesn't necessarily mean it was the nuns that were doing it themselves. They could have also hired, and it's the same thing with monks. It wasn't necessarily the monks brewing themselves. They could have hired lay people to be doing the work for them on their extensive properties. Like a lot of the properties in Dublin, for example, a lot of the churches, they had these liberties, these big properties. They had other people sometimes brewing for them or malting for them out on the property, as opposed to the actual members of the religious community, who could be quite few in number, depending on the size. So something to keep in mind, just because brewing was happening in these communities doesn't necessarily mean that it was nuns themselves that were doing it. Now, with that in mind, I want to turn to Lisa to talk about perhaps one of the most famous nuns and sort of her stories.
Sure. So I, for those who are just listening, I'm going to sort of scroll down. I'm wearing my naughty Hildegard ESB shirt. So it's a sort of Hildegard of Bingen, or von Bingen, as we used to say more in the 80s and 90s. But now we just translate the von into the of because we're normal like that. So we didn't back in the day, now we do. But yeah, Hildegard is awesome. She is a polymath. She does everything because, you know, she's, you know, certainly, you know, this amazing nun in that she's writing about stuff. Or to your point, Christina, she's writing, but she's actually basically dictating, because she can do that. Like, she is fancy enough that she can just like talk and have someone else take down everything. And I think that that's also an important piece too around, you know, thinking about these monastic communities, both male and the female, in many, if not most cases, these are your posh folks. So they may not be doing a lot of the hands-on stuff themselves. Sometimes they are, though. So it's interesting in that, you know, there is no one kind of blanket statement, but it is worth saying, you know, in most cases, you know, these are people coming from, you know, like this already very sort of, let's say sort of glorified part of the population already, because they're not necessarily, you know, royalty. They're like, they're like your mid-tier rich people. They're up there, you know, going all the way up to the top. And that's especially, you know, with their extra daughters or extra sons who you don't want to marry off, they go into the religious life, because then they're gonna get you up there by doing their praying and so on and so forth. But they also kind of become tourist attractions themselves. Like, it is a whole thing. There's a whole piece we could do that we probably won't get into today, but just around kind of them, you know, how these become inns. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about that before with kind of, you know, oldest pubs and things like that, because a lot of these monastic communities do turn into, you know, other stuff. But again, Hildegard, she's just awesome. She's born in about 1098, you know, goes to the nunnery probably when she is maybe 8, maybe 9, maybe 10, maybe 12 or 13. Like, there's no, you know, kind of, you know, definitive proof of when that is, but it's because she's one of so many children. And she is like a little bit of a weirdo from the start, that her parents are like, this is the religious one. Like, this is the one who's going to go and like intercede for us, because, you know, she's having her visions. She's having stuff like happen, you know, and again, this is all kind of from her mouth, if you like, you know, from when she's very young. But you know, she's there, she's being mentored in her particular religious community. She's writing stuff, she's composing stuff. And I would say probably for a lot of people my age, in their 40s and 50s and stuff, probably would have come across her first as a composer, because anyone who remembers the big sort of chant, you know, like Gregorian chant revival of the early 90s, A lot of Hildegard's music also got sort of recorded and put out at that time, late 80s, early 90s. People were very big into their sort of medieval music, but her music is amazing. It's just fascinating to listen to. And it's, you know, it's the kind of thing, it's very soothing to have on in the background, but also like, it's weird. And I like it because it's weird. So, you know, she wrote music, and again, highly recommend a lot of those things. She wrote plays, and we can link to, there's some fantastic episodes of Going Medieval where Eleanor Yenigo talks about her. We're also going to link to one of her articles on her, which is just, you know, absolutely fabulous. It's hilarious, but it's really talking about, you know, how much we know about her, which is pretty unusual for not just a woman of that time, but like anyone of that time, because she was kind of so prolific. And I think one of the sort of cool facts is that she actually, like, again, kind of becomes a tourist attraction because her stuff's getting out there. The Catholic Church, like the Pope and Rome, sends people out to be like, ooh, we don't know if we like this. And they turn up, to be like, do we need to like excommunicate or what's going on? But they turn up and they're like, she's awesome, we love it. And so she basically then gets to go and have her own religious community. There's some amazing miracles, maybe not, and stuff that goes on, but like, you know, she just becomes more and more popular. But the other reason we're talking about her today is that, you know, there in what's now Northern Germany, she's brewing with hops. And we know that because she writes about it. So you will sometimes see, you know, people sort of take this in a sort of to a sort of logical extreme, being like, she's the first person to use.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Just hops in beer. No, this is not... this is not a thing. Do not go down that path. But, you know, she definitely writes about it, and she writes about hops specifically, you know, as a preservative for the beer. So she's really like, oh, this is cool. This makes your beer last longer. She's not talking about it should be dank or it should be, you know, we're not, there's none of that. There's none of that, but it's amazing. And, you know, she writes about all kinds of other sort of, other medicine. She writes about some more naughty things that I'd highly recommend folks take a read of or listen to. But you know, we're kind of a family podcast, right? So we won't get too much into it. That's a lie. We're not a family podcast.
What?
But
we're a family podcast. I can't to know.
No, the fuck we are not.
But yeah, she's definitely like, she's all there writing about like the female sexuality. It is, you know, it's hot stuff. Recommend. So there's some fantastic stuff. Again, the music is kind of my OG jam with her, but really, really cool. Like, and again, I highly recommend people go back and listen to some of the episodes of Going Medieval, talking about these plays and kind of almost like proto operas she gets her nuns to put on, because they sound like amazing, like just nuts, but in a good way. So it's cool. So we've got all of, you know, so much of her writing. And again, she was fancy enough that she could dictate it to people. But yeah, you know, her stuff about hops is really, really interesting. Because again, we're really talking, you know, kind of 12th century here. Hops aren't really still going to become a big thing in brewing really for another couple hundred years. Like, it's just kind of stuff people are doing, you know, to make sure that their stuff kind of lasts locally. But I don't know, Christina, if you want to kind of get back and do that sort of definition about sort of, we've got hops, we've got, you know, we've got ale, we've got beer, we've got gruit, and why people are wrong about gruit. Let's start with that.
Yeah, so I think, and Martin Cornell has written extensively about this.
Oh, yeah.
This idea, I think people have recreate beers and ales, I should say, ales in UK and Ireland, and they call them gruit. But that really isn't quite a thing here. I mean, that's a very specific kind of thing. And very clear in Belgium what that was. There's, you know, we have a lot of data and for that. Whereas Martin Cornell would argue there's evidence that a lot of ales might not have had any herbal additions, or if they did, maybe one, or they would be repurposed into medicinal beers. And that's when you can kind of get more of a combination. And yes, surely some would have multiple herbal additives, possibly. But it wasn't something that was added as a matter of course. It wasn't something that necessarily everybody added the same thing. It certainly, and I would agree with Martin Cornell wholeheartedly on his sort of take on herbal additives in UK beers. And I would extend that also to Ireland. Again, because certainly in Irish law and Breton law, if they were using a standard herbal or herbal combination, it would have popped up in the laws, and it doesn't. So to me, that indicates that there isn't something as standard. There isn't something that's sort of this we're all making this kind of thing. But anyway, the moral of the story is this concept of grew beer, or grew ale, it really applies to a certain and specific kind. And it's not a word that I think should be used just to describe any ale that just doesn't have hops in it and has different herbal additives. I think words should be closely defined.
Definitely. No, I think that makes sense. And I think, you know, again, the other thing I really love about, and it's important to remember this too, the other sort of Hildegard's take on hops is, you know, she doesn't, you know, just see them as helping the beer. She sees it as medicinal because she's all about using her medicinal plants, but it's all medicinal in, you know, in a specifically, you know, medieval system. Like it's going to help you with your melancholy, you know, or your bile. So we're talking about your humors, and, you know, you want to make sure you're balancing your humors, and you're going to need to have kind of different things at different times of your life, et cetera, et cetera. But it is really interesting that she says, oh, well, the hops help you with, you know, this one specifically. And again, she doesn't go super deep into it, but it's a really interesting way it's kind of phrased. And again, obviously in translation, but, you know, again, it sounds very much like it's based on observation, like it feels scientific and not just like a kind of, you know, folk remedy, if that makes sense. Like it feels like she's like, oh, you might try this and try this, and then this leads to that result. So again, it's really, really interesting that, you know, and again, Eleanor Yetiga points this out, that other people were like, no, you're, you know, this is wrong. And she's like, no, actually, no, that doesn't make sense based on sort of observation. So she's like, what if we used, you know, observation to say this supports our, you know, our theory, instead of just being like, wolves did it, which is, you know, kind of where everyone else was going. The vibes, exactly. But, you know, she lived to be 81. You know, she didn't die until 1179, so that's a pretty good innings for that era. Now, again, that said, we always see a lot of nonsense about everyone dies when they're 30 or whatever. No, that's
no.
Just people who don't understand how these things get calculated. But yeah,
if you survived through childhood, you were probably looking at your 50s and 60s at least, like that. That number is significantly brought down by the incredibly high childhood mortality rate. But if you survived your childhood, you know, 60s.
And especially like 60s. If you're one of these kind of nuns, and, you know, in this kind of religious community, you don't have to give birth. I mean, you know, sometimes things happen in some communities, but, you know, not in this case. This is more kind of the ladies being friends with other ladies more than anything else. So we're cool with that. So you're not going to have to go through childbirth. You're pretty well looked after from a food perspective. So, you know, you're probably okay. So,
and I should retract that. It really is 60s. Not even, you know, you're having a 60 somewhere in there is sort of the lifespan. And that changes depending on your social rank. There were times when upper wealthier men had a higher life expectancy. Oftentimes they did, because they had access to better food and better everything. So it just really depends on your social status, what was going on. You know, war kills people and childbirth kills people, and so those are outliers. They can be outliers, but a lot of that it just really depends. A lot of it is really brought down by this childhood mortality.
Yeah, absolutely. Childhood mortality and childbirth are all bad. And then at other times, like you say, sometimes the rich people are eating stuff that's so bad for you, that ends up killing them early.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know.
Sometimes they have a lower rate. So it really just depends on, as with everything in history, it is incredibly context specific, and it really depends on who you were and where you were and when you were and all sorts of other things. And if you were smearing, you know, mercury and lead on your face and, you know, all kinds of fun things like that. I have spent, I don't know how many months looking at medicinal beer recipes, and I really don't know how some of these people survived. The things that they put in beer to cure themselves, I just...
Yeah, no, fair enough. And that's the thing, like, it does look like from what we know of it, her beer recipe is, at least, you know, Hildegard and what's going on in her, you know, her two communities that she had, like, they're pretty kind of normal, you know, again, air quoting, like, there's nothing crazy that we would see in these. And she also recommends, you know, sort of a barley drink as a restorative if you've been sick, which you're like, that's great. They would have gotten some calories, you know, we're all happy here. This is great. So... Yeah,
there were definitely things that absolutely worked. They might not necessarily know why they worked, but they absolutely worked. Like, I don't want to continue this idea that medieval people were somehow very dumb, because I think that is a really silly misconception that medieval people were smart. They, you know, a lot of them knew what they were doing. They might not have the scientific data to back them up like we do now, but they did understand that things could happen. And, like, let's be real, we were putting strychnine in malt tonics in the late 1800s and early 1900s.
Oh, yeah.
So we're not really in a position to talk in the modern era about how smart we are now.
My God, I know. It's like Irish mothers are convinced flat 7-upper is going to cure everything. You know? So there you go. Hildegard was onto something.
She was absolutely onto something.
Crack, though, doesn't she?
I mean, she definitely sounds like she was fun too. Yeah, like with the music and the plays and the, you know, basically being like, I'm going to have people write stuff for me. This is great. Like, she's living her best life in the monastery. You know, she gets really sad when her, you know, close friend, as we see, you know, certain kinds of historians say, gets sent to a different monastery. And it's like, well, she was sad because her friend left. And you're like, yeah, her friend. Okay. Good. Yeah, but it's a whole thing. She was otherwise, you know, living her best life, got to make a lot of, you know, choices, got to have kind of a lot of agency in a time when, like, most people wouldn't, not even most women, like, you know. So, you know, fair play to Hildegard, and definitely, like, get some of her music, and I'm sorry, not sorry, more like Hildegard of banging than Hildegard of banging with the music. It's phenomenal. And I'd like to remind everyone, I'm on a non-alcoholic beer at the moment, so my brain is just that, like, childish and, you know, all those things. Yeah. But again, sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, I think there's just this, and I should say air quotes around dumb, because, you know, I just get really frustrated when there's this idea of, you know, people portray medieval people as, you know, quote unquote dumb or quote unquote stupid, to use terms that I don't particularly like to use, but that's sort of the language that people now kind of use around them. And I think that that's really, we really need to get away from that idea, particularly.
It's like, have really you met most modern people? A lot of people are barely functional.
Humans are,
yes,
humans are as they always are, as they always were. When we, you know, when we know more, when we have more data, you know, we move along that way. But, you know, people use what they had and the information they had, and you'd be really be surprised at, in terms of the medicinal cures, what might have, you'd look down and go, oh, well, that makes sense, you know, because we know now that this and this works. That said, I found one recipe that involved mashing up a skull and using it in beer.
Hey.
So to cure something, which I can tell you does not do anything, and do not under any circumstances
do not attempt at home
anything like that. Of course, that wasn't medieval; that was early modern. So we can the medieval people can kind of again pretend it. Well, it wasn't us.
Did it specify, Christina, how you had to get the skull?
Yeah, so the,
like,
idea,
the skull of a smited minstrel or something like that.
Right. So the thing is, So you'll find a specific recipe in My The Devil's in the Draft Line. So I'm not going to give too much away, but let's just say it was a very weirdly binarily gendered. And it only considered, like, if you're a man, you needed a woman's skull. And if you're a woman, you needed a man's skull. And if you weren't, you're not on the gender binary, then I guess you're right. Screwed. And the person had to die a violent death. Strangulation was ideal.
Oh, what's a grace.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, you'll have to read more about that in whatever. But yeah, and there's lots of things like that. Like they cured the plague by cutting a pigeon in half and sticking it on the swollen lip. Like there's a lot of stuff, you know. But then you think about some of the stuff that we're doing now, and you go, well, you know, it's the same as it ever was. It is the same. But I do want to circle back to some more examples, continental examples of nuns brewing sort of around the time of Hildegard, maybe a little bit later. So about 1223, Caesarius of Hesterbach, and I'm sorry, I probably brutalized that because it's a name that I read, not a name that I say.
That's normal,
wrote some stories about nuns and that hint at like their brewing culture. So one of my favorites is the story of Sister Euphemia and her demon. So Sister Euphemia, a demon had appeared to her throughout her life and told her, you know, you need to marry like a hot rich man and you need to do this. And she was like, no, I'm going to be a nun. So that naturally pissed off the demons. And so they kind of followed her and tormented her throughout her life. And so one night, and it was literally like a dark, stormy night, the demons come to her. But they come as her nun friends. So it's the middle of the night and they start talking to her. And they're like, come to the basement, let's drink some ale. And so she's immediately suspicious because, well, they're talking, which is a no-no. And it's midnight and that's a no-no. So she's like, oh, the demons, not my friends. And so she does, you know, what we all do when we're scared, which is hide under the covers and pretend it all goes away. Fortunately for Euphemia, that doesn't quite work and she is attacked. But what it tells us is that the nuns were brewing, because she talks about the ale that's in the basement. So they're making the ale, or someone is making the ale for them. So again, this idea that ale and beer is sort of central to the monastic community. And this goes along with, back to Bridget's time, a sort of 6th century book that sort of instructions for nuns, talks about jobs and positions in monastic settlements. And one of them was brewing. And it stressed the real importance of this, but that there should be like a sister who was supervising the brewing, making sure everyone was silent again and no shenanigans were taking place. But again, we're stressing the importance of ale and brewing, because ale sort of occupies this liminal space in a lot of monastic writings. It's something that if you drink too much of it, you could get drunk, and that's very bad. But it also occupies this essential part of your daily nutrition. So it walks sort of this fine line between this like important part of what you should be doing every day with, but you can't have too much of it. So, you know, in Irish monk writings, you have these sort of discussions between monks about how much should we drink and can we drink ale? And sometimes some monastic communities say, no, you can't drink ale because it's just too enjoyable. It's just too much fun. You like it too much. And then you have monks writing back and going, no, we're going to still drink ale. And I think we'll get into heaven just the same, which is basically what he's, you know, they say back. So there is definitely, and this goes on and on and on throughout the medieval period, these sorts of discussions of how much ale can we drink? Can we drink too much? Can we drink too little? And what is the line here? Because people were very cognizant of drunkenness. So again, I think this actually does away, again, we've talked about this in previous episodes talking about Irish beer and beer in general. This does away with the idea that medieval ale was necessarily very low alcohol. It certainly wasn't if they're talking about drunkenness and drinking alongside ale. Because right. You know yourself, if you drink a lot of, you know, 0.5, 1.5, you're not going to get there. And especially when they're saying, you know, limiting to certain amounts, they're definitely talking about, you know, a normal, what we would consider quote unquote normal levels of alcohol in a drink. So again, I think that reiterates this idea that yes, absolutely, these are beverages that can be intoxicating. And they're an important part again of daily nutrition on the other side. So yeah, you have this really, really fascinating dichotomy. And I think you can see that throughout history, just this pull between two different parts of life. So I think that's really fascinating.
Okay. So, so again, I think we've talked a lot about some medieval stuff. We've talked about what's happening on the continent, what's happening in Ireland, what's happening in the UK, but there are still nuns out there getting the beer brewed. So, Katie, what have you discovered in your research?
I think when you call it research, I think that the word research is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence. I Googled.
Nonsense. That counts. But, that's a skill.
Yeah, there you go. It was like quite a few papers, like I have the Independent here and what is this called? The Drink Business. They say, move over, monk. Belgian nuns join in on the brewing tradition. And then it's like, sisters are brewing it for themselves.
Of course, like, they said that. Oh, God.
Belgian nuns join monks in beer making. And I'm like, hang on, people who are right. Man, okay, that's a guy, Philip. Oh, Eloise wrote the other one. Probably a lady.
Oh,
I can't
you
assume
think so.
Their gender, though. But so they're talking about how the nuns' abbey was falling apart so that they needed to do repairs. So they decided to, at the Maredret Abbey, is that a famous one? I don't really know. That they decided to join the lads. And it's like, hello.
Exactly.
But their beers were based on spelt, a grain mentioned in text by St. Hildegard.
Oh, there
we go.
A German
Benedictine abbess.
Very good.
From the 11th century, who inspired the Belgian order. So she inspired all of these things.
There you
go. Plants commonly grown in the nun's garden were also used. But I hate the way they're like, oh yeah, move over, lads. The girls
right.
are joining.
This what has never been done before in history.
Cliched, gendered approach. It's like, my God, the nuns have been doing it for centuries. And they've been doing a great job.
Absolutely. Oh, that's so interesting, though. Yeah, and I think you see that, like, every time there's a new, like, I feel like every 10 or 12 years, there's, like, there's going to be a new monastic brewery. And, you know, mostly the lads, like you're saying. And then people kind of lose interest or, you know, whatever. That's there are still like a fair few that are going, but I feel like it's always presented as this new thing, but you wouldn't ever have someone framing it like, they're out to join the commercial brewers who are also men like them. But, you know, it's just weird how you would frame that.
Yeah.
So it's good to see they're out there, but yeah, it's a strange, very ahistorical framing of those mm-hmm. stories.
You don't have to go back very far to figure it out, you know?
Yeah, and actually it's interesting, even especially in Belgium, I would say, where you have all of these communities of lay women as well, you know, who were doing all sorts of interesting things commercially, but like brewing and lace making and all of these other things. So yeah, that's an interesting
there
one.
You go.
But,
yeah, I think that
it's
goes along with
aspect.
with the myth that women have only started working recently when women have
always worked. Yeah, exactly. Like, this is not new. Try working on a farm. Hi. Yeah.
Don't. If you have a choice, don't run a mile. I'm sorry. It's hard work.
It is. Yes. All of my farming relatives would agree, but then there's a fair few of them still doing it. And so there you go. But, someone's got to, you know, be getting the cows out there. So there you go. But yeah, so I think before we wrap up, I think we would just want to put that out there to the listeners. Are there any new monastic, ideally nun-run breweries you guys have heard of or any that you would recommend? Again, we know that there are plenty still going in Belgium and a couple of other places, you know, Germany, the Netherlands, here and there that the lads are doing. But Again, there's clearly some nuns out there still doing this. We would love to hear more about what that's like. If anyone's ever sort of visited one of those or has had a beer from one of those, I think that would be really, really interesting. But I think we'd also love to hear, like, you know, have you guys seen any kind of more discussion around some of this kind of earlier medieval women's brewing with Bridget's Day, you know, kind of with these things coming up? I think that'd be really interesting to hear more of those stories, and not just from us, because we know you're going to hear it from us, but, you know. Curious to know if you guys are hearing those things out in the zeitgeist. So, you know, we're planting seeds and hoping that they all grow. Yay, just as these nuns would grow their barley. And so I tied it all together there. It was amazing.
I see what you did there.
Gonna pat myself on the back, because, you know,
yeah,
job well done to me. But I think with that, I think we've probably covered it. We've got a lot of exciting things in the pipeline coming up, folks. We've got some interviews. We've got some more historical things, but again, we're going to keep saying it. We've got exciting times coming up with Christina's book. So do keep a listen out for those. There's going to be some events in person, as she mentioned earlier. So we'll try to keep you guys apprised of those, because you get autographs. Autographs, folks. You know, let's just put that
selfies.
Out there.
Selfies. Autographs are so 1990s. It's all about the selfies these days.
Selfie. So, Christina, figure out your hair color in advance. Well, what if someone tried to get you with, like, different hair each time? Just gonna, no pressure. Put that out there. All right. So with that said, anything anyone else wants to add about women brewing in the medieval period? Or we kind of, have we solved world hunger with it? I don't know.
I think we're good for today. I think we've done well for the day after and before the storm.
Yes.
You know, we're doing okay.
Yeah. We all have power. You know, it's we all have beer. And, you know, folks, last time we recorded, Katie had run out of beer. So this is, you know, we've solved that. So, you know, there we go.
I'm going to Saint Bridget. I went to the shop and magicked it up myself. There we go.
Oh, there we go. That is it. So, folks, thank you again for listening. Of course, thanks to Christina and Katie, and we will be back with you in your ear holes again very soon. So thank you and goodbye.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.